go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Not only is it Friday, it's Friday 420. Smoke it if you got it. Enjoy it legally, if you can enjoy it legally where you got it. Yes, the national holiday that somehow mysteriously developed around the cannabis culture has found us once again, and it found us on a Friday, so I imagine there are a whole bunch of people out there just blazed out of their minds today. So, and I guess an hour and 40 minutes ago would have been the real high water mark of the celebration. You know, 420 on 420. But enjoy it. Enjoy it responsibly, right? Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It is indeed the 20th day of April, 2018, and well, by Jove, it's the end of the week. It's Friday on the front porch and all of that. I guess we won't have Steve from Georgia Stan joining us this evening, because Steve from Georgia Stan is off somewhere, presumably not in Georgia Stan, and vacationing merrily. So we'll see what happens. If you want to participate in Friday on the front porch, you're more than welcome to. If you've never done so before, what you need to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, Sparky Dunk, and you will be in the thick of things after Sparky shows you accepts your contact request and shows you the breadcrumb trail to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that we have there in the out in the ether sphere. All right, that makes no sense, Brother Deacon Asa. I mean, not Brother Deacon Asa made sense. I don't know why we wouldn't be streaming on White Rose, but we aren't, or so I'm told. Daggum, I don't know, maybe it's broken again. But we're sending, and levels are leveling, and packets are passing, and go figure. But we're live on headon.live, and maybe that's, well, Thanks for letting me know, Brother Deacon Asa. I do appreciate it. So, no, this program's live, and on the HP MP3, HQ, high quality MP3 stream? Yeah, but Marty, is that headon.live or is that White Rose Society? Don't know. Meanwhile, Marty also notes with regard to 420, that's okay, I'll just breathe the air. Well, you know, you're in California, Marty. That might qualify as a contact buzz. You know what I mean? Yeah. So with this being the end of the week, it's a day no different from any other in one respect. We have thank yous to send out. We have two thank yous to send out on this day. Thanks very kindly to Bernice. Thank you, Bernice, so very much for your subscription. You are a partial sponsor of the program this evening. Thank you very kindly, Bernice, and thank you as well. To Carl, up in Ohio. Thank you, Carl. And if anyone would like to provide congeniality with Bernice and Carl, well, we've got a challenge on the table that has thus far been utterly unresponded to. We've been looking for 10 new subscribers at $10 a piece. In other words, less than half the cost of your average fast food hamburger per program. The challenge comes courtesy of Tony in Chico. And he offered to double the first month's contribution of 10 $10 a month subscribers. And we have thus far, no luck. But I'll leave that open for another day in the hopes that people will respond. As for regular fundraising, well, it's been a long week. It's been an average length week, Monday through Friday. I mean, that's when we're here every week for 3 hours a night. But that being the case, contributions have lagged far, far, far behind. And so we find ourselves this evening needing to raise $650. Ouch. $650. 10 at 65, 65 people at $10. Hey, if we got 10 new subscribers signed up, that would be awesome, and Tony's challenge would be fulfilled. But that's where the situation stands. $650. In other words, that's 3.5 days of no fundraising at all this week. 3.5 days of goose eggs. In other words, we knocked out Monday and half of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But anyway, so that's where it stands. $650 to raise. At 8 minutes past the hour, with the thank yous having been extended, a reminder, if you would like to contribute, then go over to headon.live and use the PayPal button. If you want to take advantage of the subscription challenge, check the little box out. If you don't, just put in a number and we'll go. The Patreon campaign applies to Tony's challenge as well. And it isn't associated with Facebook. It isn't associated with PayPal, so that the deductions aren't even pulled until the first of the month. So if you sign up at Patreon, well, that's you won't even feel it until May the 1st. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. Ralphs is putting a $30 challenge on the table, so that would get us down below $600 if somebody will respond to that. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. So that would, if that's met, then that would take us down to $590, and that's a big deal. Thank you very, very much indeed, Ralphs. The high-quality MP3 stream of White Rose Society. Marty says he thinks that's it. Yeah, okay, so maybe it is on. Ah, it was momentary, says Brother Deacon Asa. All better now, so I don't have to worry about that. So we're streaming on both platforms, and that's good. That means we're available at TuneIn and Roku and Stitcher and God only knows what else. Good, 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 good. Let's check in over here and take a look at the... good afternoon to VT Blom in the chat room. Sparky says White Rose is good on his internet radio. Excellent. One less thing to worry about. Hallelujah, glory. And it looks like after a pretty ugly week here. We're going to have a lovely weekend. Not a cloud in the sky today here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia, Stan. We're about 59 degrees right now. We'll get down to some pretty ugly cold overnight, 34. But golly, tomorrow, all the way up to 63 degrees. Maybe even 64, who knows? But then we don't get to see the sun again until a week from Sunday. Damnedest spring I recall in a while. That's just, ugh. So let's just, having said that, let's get the ball rolling. Program note for next week. I will be filling in for Mike Malloy on Thursday of next week, the 26th. So mark your calendars for that. There'll be cake and ice cream, and no, I'm looking forward to that opportunity. So where to begin the evening? How about a little update? You might recall earlier we had the story. This was last week. We had the story of the mean ass white lady who decided to scream invective at a couple of women who were members of the United States military. At a Cheddar's restaurant, that's the franchise, never been in there, in Georgia. Well, she has been charged with battery for laying hands upon those two soldiers. Good. A little bit of an attempt at justice. That's as it should be. And, of course, also today, in terms of news of the moment, there was another school shooting today. In Ocala, Florida, Marion County, Florida. There was a report of a shooting today at Forest High School. The school was evacuated. Parents were told to go to a certain Baptist church to be reunited with their children. One suspect was in custody as of 9 a.m. this morning, and one student was injured and treated by medics on the scene. Shoo. Well, now. At least, how do you call that good news? Well, 17 people weren't killed. But the details are sketchy. The roulette wheel, the National Rifle Association's roulette wheel of death landed on Ocala this morning, but then the little pointer ticked over to an empty space. Let's put it that way. Jesus. But no, as far as the she's being referred to now, Judy Tucker is. As the thug granny, she was charged with battery in Georgia for putting her hands on the two female soldiers at the Cheddar's. On one of the two, she was arrested and then released on, wait for it, $650 bond. The Associated Press reporting says that according to the Bibb County Sheriff's report, Judy James Tucker, told the deputies, "It all started because I'm white. It's a racial issue." Namely, according to Stephanie Mitchell, 34 years old, Judy James Tucker's adult son, Robbie, used obscene sexist language as he told her and 27-year-old Treasure Sharp to learn how to park on Saturday. And then the Tuckers followed the women inside the restaurant where Robbie Tucker called them black lesbian bitches. Yeah. Treasure Sharp at one point said, "I'm pregnant." To which Robbie Tucker replied, "Oh, really? By her?" But somehow or another, Robbie Tucker managed to get out of any charges. I'm surprised, you know, Billable Rick can square me up if I'm wrong, but you know, battery, you don't have to slug somebody to get battery. All you have to do is touch. The old common law meaning of battery, which was adopted in most of the jurisdictions in this country, defines battery as an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. And so if it's insulting or provoking, merely touching someone is battery. Now, on the other hand, assault is putting someone in reasonable fear that they are about to receive an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. That's assault. And I don't know. I don't know how Robbie Tucker got out from under that one. And Foofraw at Cheddar's. Judy James Tucker has shut down her website and apparently closed up shop where she ran Judy Tucker's Complete Art Restoration. The Cheddar's restaurant has banned Judy Tucker. We don't know if they've banned Robbie or not. With regard to the incident, the Cheddar's chain said, "We were appalled by the behavior of the individuals who confronted the two female service members. Such behavior flies in the face of our values, and those individuals are no longer welcome in our restaurant." Judy Tucker is not currently employed at Mercer University. She has occasionally taught an art class in the past, but will not be teaching at Mercer in the future. Said Mercer University. Jesus. Dumbasses can't even go out to dinner and behave themselves. You know, I mentioned the other day. What's this, Jeremy? Jeremy in Vermont says, "I know a person who did about the same and was charged with domestic assault and placed on 3 years probation." Well, maybe it's because she's a septuagenarian thug granny. I don't know. Marty noting, "One must really congratulate the two women soldiers for their restraint and not beating the crap out of that old woman and her kid." In regard to the pithy retort of her son Robbie, Robbie Tucker, Earther says, "What the what, Bob? In whose mind is that a good comeback? You're just making it more clear you just said something stupid." Well, that's kind of par for the course, Earther. When you're dealing with racists and bigots, they're not known for their snappy repartee. Yeah. But I mentioned the other night that these hucksters and grifters love nothing better than riding on the backs of the people that they oppress and insult and discriminate against as a means of fundraising. I think it was in the course of talking about Matt Staver and his Liberty Council that runs a lawyering for Jesus grift that goes out and defends odious and reprehensible characters like Sister Clark Kim Davis. Well, we've got another example, and it's a doozy. The other day, the Pulitzers came out, and the Washington Post picked up a Pulitzer to add to its collection. And in this case, it took the Pulitzer Prize based upon the reporting, and it was fine reporting of the little mini tsunami of women who were once young girls who were creepered over by Roy Tola Moore. And starting with Lee Korfman and the story of how he creeped on her, and on through stories of how he would sleaze around, you know, this guy, 30, 31 years old, sleazing around 14, 15, 16-year-old little girls, going after Santa's little helper there in the Gadsden Mall, that sort of thing. All with pretty much the same M.O. Well, lo and behold, you never let a good crisis go to waste. With the news of the Pulitzer coming out for the Washington Post, and congratulations to them, along comes an email from Roy Tola Moore to his dear followers. Instead of being held accountable in the court of law, the Washington Post just done won the Pulitzer Prize for their slander and lies against me and my family. Meanwhile, I'm being sued for standing up for myself and my family from ruthless lies and attacks. This is a outrage, all caps, outrage. Ruthless lies. Not one of the women who said that he creepered on them was a woman named Ruth who lied about it. In other words, everybody else was telling the truth. You see, the goddess of irony keeps a very close eye on Roy Tola Moore as that sentence that she put into his brain to have typed or into the brain of some servant of his. Some little creature. Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that he accuses, because remember, this here is a lawyer, all right? And if you can count on, if you should be able to count on anybody, I mean, lay people get a break on issues of law that we do not afford to lawyers. For instance, if anybody on planet Earth, or at least in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on Earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, should know the difference between libel and slander, you would think it's somebody who has been, a trial court judge. And a judge on the highest court in the entire state. The quick rule of thumb is to just remember that slander is spoken and libel is written or published. The way it always worked for me is to remember spoken, S, slander, S, and libel, L, literature, L. And if you hang on to that, you'll remember the difference. So that cornpone Cato, Roy Tolamore, couldn't even correctly, falsely accuse the Washington Post. And so, having explained that he'd been subjected to slander and lies, which would actually have been libel if it were anything, but it wasn't libel, he said, "You and I must stand strong in our legal fight against the forces of evil. So today, can I count on you to please help me strike back by chipping in a donation of $1,000, $500, $250, $150, $100, $75, $50, $35, $25 to support our legal defense fund?" Yeah, I know. They never stop. "And all because I wanted to stand up for traditional marriage between one man and one woman here in America and in the Senate of the new United States of America. Oh, woe is me." I wish I was kidding. I'm not kidding. But that's, that's how they operate, isn't it? And hell, Roy won't even offer him a damn cowbell. Nope. So, there's no end. It's not like anybody's surprised. So, where you formerly fundraised on the backs of gay people wanting to get married, now they're fundraising on the backs of little girls that got groped by the guy doing the fundraising. That is some of what you call chutzpah, is what that is. No doubt about it. Food porn. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This would be the prevention part. Has expanded a previously announced warning about romaine lettuce. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now advising people all over the country, do not eat any form, whether it be whole heads of romaine lettuce or hearts of romaine, that were grown in the Yuma, Arizona growing area. Previously, the CDC and P had said, don't eat chopped romaine including salads or salad mixes. Now it's any romaine at all. 53 people have been sickened by a current E. coli outbreak in 16 states. Of those 53 people, 31 have been hospitalized. Nobody's dead yet. Good. But 5 out of the 53 have developed something called hemolytic uremic syndrome, which is extremely dangerous to life forms that, you know, have kidneys, which would include just about every human being. Not sure about Roy Moore. You want some more romaine, Roy? And every time I see one of these, it's pathetic because, pathetic and infuriating because it doesn't have to be this way. E. coli 0157H7 is the culprit here. And it comes because at some point in time, the contaminated product has come into contact with poop. Now, I'm not sure about farming methods in Yuma, Arizona. Maybe some of the Arizona contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation can enlighten me. But I don't think a whole lot of cow manure or whatnot gets spread on the green and vast romaine fields of Yuma, Arizona. So that means somewhere in the production process, things get jumbled together enough that poop gets all over the lettuce. Yes, that's right. 6:32 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and I've already gone to work on somebody's dinner. Don't worry, your green salad is fine. It's the romaine we're worried about. While the current cases, the reporting goes, are connected to the Yuma, Arizona area, the CDC warns that package labels do not often identify growing regions, because if we had a regulation that did something like that, that said, you know, your romaine comes from Yuma, Arizona, well, that would be a job-killing regulation. And we know that job-killing regulations are the absolute bane and mortal enemy of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, Christian Republicans everywhere. Job-killing regulations. So the CDC is not mincing any words. Consumers should throw out any romaine lettuce in their homes, even if partially eaten, and avoid eating romaine at restaurants unless the establishment can confirm that the lettuce is not from Yuma, Arizona. And, of course, the restaurants cannot confirm that. So if you're sitting down over the weekend, and would you like a green toss salad or a Caesar salad? Your answer is green toss salad, no romaine, please. Or, hey, you know, until we figure out how the romaine got the poop on it, let's just take a pass on the salads for the next couple of weeks. What do you say? Oh, shit. In more ways than one. I just realized I had salad today. Daggummit. Blagstaggin. Not... So, if you've eaten romaine and you suddenly find yourself having real bad stomach cramps and vomiting and diarrhea, which is often bloody in nature, woo! Yep, dinner's done. Anybody who experiences that needs to not screw around and get to a hospital emergency room fast. Looking at the CNN story, the following as well. Washing your romaine will not help because Ian Williams, chief of the CDC's Outbreak Response and Prevention Branch, noted, this bacteria can actually get inside the lettuce leaf. Washing it does not make it safe. Just throw it out and count yourself the better. Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, day late, dollar short. I'm so glad I just finished my Caesar salad made with romaine lettuce for lunch. Now, what did I ever do to you? You're the one tuning in, Matt. But hey, your romaine didn't come from Yuma. Maybe, you know, there in the Bay Area, maybe you got a nice Caesar salad made with free-range, cruelty-free, vegan, non-GMO, soy-free, gluten-free romaine. Rooting for you, Matt! A word to the wise is sufficient. Add romaine lettuce, eh? Asks Marty. What's life without risk? As for me, I'll switch my salad base to spinach and pasta from romaine. Don't you remember the poop on the baby spinach outbreak of a few years back? Because this country somehow can't keep poop off of things that don't poop? That's the thing with the lettuce. Lettuce doesn't poop. And meanwhile, the Federal Aviation Administration, after the lady got sucked halfway out of the airplane and killed on the Southwest Airlines flight that had to divert and land on in an emergency fashion because the engine blew up, the FAA has ordered inspections of aircraft engines on an emergency basis. The FAA is going to require some engines to be inspected within the next 20 days, including ultrasonic testing, because basically this was an old Boeing 737, and part of the fan blade in the jet engine came off and got sucked into the engine. The engine blew up, a chunk of the engine blew through the window, and then tried to suck out the passenger, Ms. Reardon, I think was her name, from New Mexico. Yeah. We hadn't had a passenger death on a U.S. airline since 2009. And it was the first time Southwest ever had a passenger die as a result of an accident or, you know, an incident, what have you. Mm-hmm. The engine manufacturer prompted the call for the inspections for planes with the CFM-56-7B engine from CFM International, the manufacturer of the jet engine. Problem is, that's one of the most commonly used jet engines all around the world. In the U.S., 352 engines will be affected, and 681 engines worldwide. That's from estimates by CFM International. And the FAA was quite frank. They said, we evaluated all the relevant information and determined the unsafe condition described previously is likely to exist or develop in other products of the same design. Well then, So, yeah, so that. Look at this. We're 40 minutes into the program and no Trump gossip at all. I like to call that a win. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky noting, in the salad department, I'm safe. I'm pretty sure I haven't had a salad since Clinton was president, second term. Good, I think. Oh, okay. Jeremy points out the passenger died from blunt impact to the head and neck, not being half sucked out. She was a Vermonter for years before she moved away to New Mexico. Well, there's no... God almighty. But a passenger was halfway sucked, pretty much, or that was described as being halfway sucked out the window. I can't imagine that 300 or so miles per hour is any kind of good for you. Maybe an announcement that we can stand down from sweat condition alpha for a little bit until geezer disgustus makes it worse. According to Bloomberg, North Korea. And see, this gives you an idea how different outfits report different things. CBS News. Okay, let's go to the Washington Post. North Korea to halt nuclear and missile tests and close testing, state media says. CBS News reports North Korea says it is suspending nuclear and long-range missile tests and is shutting down a nuclear test site. Both of those. That's good news, right? Business Insider reports days before North and South Korea meet for diplomatic talks, the North says it will stop testing missiles. The Guardian reports North Korea says it has suspended nuclear and missile tests ahead of North-South summit. BuzzFeed reports, and you'll see the significance of this in a moment, BuzzFeed reports North Korea's Kim Jong-un says he is suspending all nuclear and missile testing ahead of a potential meeting with Trump. So what's the takeaway from all of that? I mean, if everyone... Well, that's good news. North Korea, golly, they're showing some real good faith ahead of sitting down to, they already sat down and talked to the Secretary of State who isn't Secretary of State, right? Right. Maybe the war that is technically and officially still going on, maybe there could be a peace treaty and maybe it could be ended. And wouldn't that be a feather in Tangerine Tiberius's cap? Well, oops. Because there's a critical bit of detail left out in the headlines from all the other news outfits. Bloomberg puts it this way. North Korea has achieved its goal of developing nuclear weapons and does not plan to conduct further nuclear or ICBM tests, state-run media reports. Now, from a journalistic standpoint, that's an entirely different story, isn't it? That's North Korean state-run media reporting that North Korea has reached a sufficient degree of technological ability that they don't need to test any more nuclear weapons. They know they work. Now, is that put out for the consumption of North Koreans? Or are all those other news outlets just trying to get an increasingly likely to shit themselves American people to take a breather and stand down from sweat condition alpha? Or maybe to get the cantaloupe Claudius to take a breath and maybe not set the world on fire with nuclear weapons. But this goes back to a question that Steve from Georgistan asked several weeks ago. You know, Bob, what do you read? Well, I read as much as I can, and using the techniques that were taught me back in the newsroom days, when you've got the time to do it, take several different sources and look at them in parallel. Now, most of us do not have that kind of time. But when you get the opportunity, do so, and you'll get a pretty good idea of how stories are reported and what given, I don't want to say slant, but what the operational attitude is of the various outlets. I would say in this particular example, most outlets favor the hooray, we won approach. Look at that. North Korea is knuckling under and they're giving up their nuclear testing programs. Bloomberg cites the source directly, on the other hand, and gives the explanation for why they say they're doing it. Now, maybe they're lying like a rug. But that's significantly different. Or seems so to me. So we've take what comfort from it you can, I suppose. And yes, back to the airplane story. Marty says, yeah, it's not just Boeing aircraft, but Airbuses that use that engine. There are even some military birds that use them. Rolls-Royce is breathing easier. Their Trent 1000 engine that powers the 787-9 series has been downgraded for ETOPS, otherwise known as extended two-engine operations, from 330 minutes to 140 minutes, which means that's the flight time from a possible emergency point on a flight to a runway. Yeah, Marty's a flight fan. So is Brother Deacon Asa. Meanwhile, Matt in San Francisco says, Now, I fly almost exclusively Southwest at least 7 to 8 times a month. Now I think you're just messing with me. I was sitting in the back row. I heard there's a 3% better chance you'll survive a crash. If your next story is about chewing gum, I'm throwing this damn phone out on Market Street. Funny you should ask, Matt. You know, for years we've happily chewed juicy fruit chewing gum in America. And only recently did we discover that in one of the artificial flavorings in Wrigley's Juicy Fruit Chewing Gum, there's a chemical that makes your nose mysteriously slide right off. No, I'm kidding about that. Phones are expensive, Matt. Keep it in the car. Sorry, man. Sorry. You might ask about the engine, though. Has this thing been ultrasonically tested lately? Pilot get a good night's rest, did she? Good? Yeah, yeah. And that's the other side of the story. The pilot of the U.S., of the Southwest airplane was decidedly competent and effective in doing her job. And she deserves kudos for that. So, you know, rest easy. Rest easy, Matt. I mean, hell, I wish Southwest flew to Charleston, West Virginia. my life would be considerably simpler because, it's an easy to get in and out of airport, but we've got like two airlines, American, United, and Delta. And you pay through the nose for all three of them, which is probably why they don't want a fox in the hen house like Southwest. You're right, and thank you for the name. Marty said, yes, I think Captain Schultz deserves a cowbell for her airpersonship. And I'm glad you... Thank you. Thank you. She needs her name, too. Oddly enough, I've noticed that in a lot of the media, she's referred to by her first name, but she doesn't get captain or any honorific that would ordinarily be applied to a guy. Oh, let's see. Just one more before we maybe go to the top of the hour break. We haven't had a whole lot of Wayne the Peter news lately or Dana Lush news, and haven't even had a good clip from Coleon Noir. Over at the National Rifle Association. But we have had a couple of clips from Greg Stinkfield. I think that's his name. Or you pronounce the C-H as a K. Not too long back, the National Rifle Association admitted that it has taken money from nearly two dozen, almost 24, Russian-linked donors since 2015. They claim it's not much. It's a little over $2,500 since 2015. Most of those donations were routine payments for membership dues. Still trying to figure out why somebody in Russia would want to be a member of an American shooting gun-promoting organization, but, oh well, never mind. Significantly in the response that the National Rifle Association sent to Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, based on his inquiry, General Counsel for the NRA, John Fraser, said, we're also reviewing the membership of Alexander Torshin. We thought we've got a lot of members here, and we send out their copy of Gun Goober Monthly to anybody who joins up. We don't have a copy of Gun Goober Monthly that goes out in Cyrillic. But Alexander Torshin, how would you ever know that he was a Russian? But we're reviewing his membership now, seeing how there's sanctions against him, because Alexander Torshin is a close and abiding and dear friend of harmless, sweet, lovable Pootie Poot. Right. And he just happens to work at a state-run bank in Russia. And by work at a state-run bank, I don't mean that he's like a teller at a branch in suburban Irkutsk. No, this guy's got money and power. That's why he's a dear and abiding friend of Pootie Poot. But, he's never made any payments to us except for, his membership dues. But we're reviewing his membership now because we're not sure that he signed off on that part there where you have to swear allegiance to the new 90 states of America and all the guns therein because, he's Russian, so I don't know how he could do that. See, here's why it's significant. Stephen Hart, an outside counsel for the NRA, said previously in an interview with ABC News that the NRA had received just one contribution from a Russian individual between 2012 and 2018, and suddenly there's like 22 more. Oops. One, 23, tomato, tomato, potato, potato, 9mm, 45mm, 220, 225, whatever it takes. But Greg Stinkfield, there at the nation's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization, Greg Stinkfield went on the air today. Yeah. And he figured out it's taken him a while because he is a, as Winnie the Pooh described himself, he is a bear of very small brain. But he finally figured out whose fault the Parkland, Florida Valentine's Day massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And he finally figured out whose fault that was. Do you really have to guess? Get the hockey puck!
Barack Obama has returned. Yes, the left can rejoice. The savior took some time away from his Hollywood friends to write an op-ed for the Time 100 publication. And of course, just like the old days, he used the opportunity to slam gun owners in his ultimate quest to destroy the second. In his piece, President Obama claimed to honor the Parkland students. In reality, all he did was attack the NRA. Here is the stone cold truth. If Barack Obama is writing anything that deals with the Parkland students, it should be an apology. His liberal...
And it should probably be written in Kenyan Muslim, you slurper writing, because he's still a Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, and he hates guns and Jesus. Yeah, that's your stone cold truth. See, he was being clever there, Greg Stinkfield, talking about stone truth there on our 420 national holiday.
No discipline for rule breakers policy was a contributing factor that enabled the shooter to wreak the havoc that he did at Stoneman Douglas. I'm talking about Barack Obama's federal school discipline guidance policies adopted by Superintendent Robert Runce, a friend of Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. All three of them hail from where else but Chicago.
Oh, well, God damn Colonel Mustard in the billiard room with the rope. It all becomes so clear now to me. You know, if we'd have taken rule violators there at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas out, if we'd taken them out and shot some sense into them back during the Obama administration, this probably wouldn't have happened. That's right. Mm-hmm.
It was Obama's school discipline policies that prevented Parkland faculty members from having students arrested, even for severe and repeated discipline issues, even if a student was a potential threat to himself or others.
Never mind the fact that Greg Stinkfield cannot point to a single instance of that even happening at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. It's still Obama's fault. Mm-hmm. Jeremy in Vermont, under the subject line, Obama says, why doesn't anyone remember that he gave gun owners more rights he allowed for them to carry in national parks? Well, that wasn't really Obama. That was a bunch of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals made him do that against his Kenyan Muslim, you slurper judgment. That's what that was. Steve in New York, meanwhile, says, Obama's speaking against the Second Amendment? Fucking A good. And I think that's like 8, maybe like 24-point font there. Yeah. By the way, in regard to Alexander Torshin, Steve in New York points out, oh, dear Bob, isn't it clear that this is all fake news and nothing but a hoax because no collusion? You heard me. No collusion. Everyone says no collusion. No collusion. No collusion. It kind of reminds me of Barney Fife singing a cappella. Meanwhile, note coming in from Clarity. First Amendment Friday, Lars Larson, this Earth Day tip for all the left-wing tree huggers. To save trees when you use the toilet, don't wipe. So save water, don't flush. And to save the air, don't breathe. Happy Earth Day, Jesus. What a... Yeah. Of course, everything that Greg Stinkfield said, speaking of don't wipe, was pure and utter unmitigated bullshit. And the whole purpose for the guidance from the Obama Education Department had to do with the fact that, as was recently pointed out by the Trump administration Department of Education, African-American kids get punished harder and more often than white kids all over the country. Poor schools, wealthy schools, what have you. And some of what Stinkfield said, in case you're wondering, goes back to some bizarre and paranoid rambling of the guy that Trump used to refer to as Little Marco Rubio. And then Stinkfield dredged up a really dumb old trope about it. Had every child been given the same armed security your children were protected by, there never would have been a Parkland massacre for you to weaponize in your Time 100 hit piece attacking the National Rifle Association. God damn, now Bob's got me saying it! You know... If it was anybody but the National Ruble Association, you'd say that this guy was more to be pitied than despised. But no, I say we despise him. Because I'm just funny that way. And finally, a note. This little note. Lest it go by unremarked. Here in the Western Hemisphere, and in particular, down in the Caribbean, a significant day, and no, I'm not actually talking about the fact that Puerto Rico lost power again for the entire island. That remains a national shame for the United States of America. One screw-up, it was like one backhoe cut a line that wiped out electricity to the entire island. Somebody's thought of this, but when one backhoe can knock out power to an entire island of some size, you might consider that you've got a centralization problem. That couldn't have happened if there was a decentralized network of solar collectors, you know, on an island in the Caribbean where there's lots of sunshine. Collecting energy from the sun and distributing it through a decentralized grid. But somewhere there's a power company executive who is really, really yearning for that third Porsche when it's time for bonuses to come out this year. So Puerto Rico, no. Puerto Rico, bless them. Puerto Rico keeps having to go begging, even though they voted twice on that island to be request statehood. How about that? Twice. Yeah. But no, also of note, not too terribly far from Puerto Rico, Cuba. It's a big day. The island nation of Cuba is no longer being run by a Castro. The new president of Cuba is Miguel Díaz-Canel Bermúdez, and he's not somebody a lot of people knew anything about. He told a group of Congress people visiting Cuba in early 2015, "I was born in 1960 after the revolution. I'm not your best person to answer your questions about what's going to happen to Cuba in a post-Castro world." Well, yesterday, Miguel Díaz-Canel Bermúdez became the new president of Cuba. Today is his 58th birthday. The National Assembly gave him a standing ovation. The National Assembly elected him almost by unanimous consent. Raul Castro hugged him. And he is said to be a loyalist to the revolution. People wonder which way Cuba will now go. He does not have complete power over Cuba because Raul Castro is going to remain in charge of, you know, the Cuban army and the Communist Party. But one would like to hope it's a step forward, or if not forward, a step away, and that maybe with a little less Castro in the spotlight, for instance, maybe the wild-eyed maniacs in South Florida who desperately want to be restored to the property they once owned there so they can go back and try to enslave the population on sugar plantations and organized crime can get its hands back into things like casinos in Havana and whatnot. It'd be nice if they would just integrate a little more thoroughly into La Vida Americana and, you know, stop with all the shenanigans and right. Because of course the Cuban American population in South Florida is notoriously Republican. President Díaz-Canel comes from the central province of Villa Clara. And that's about 3 hours from Havana. His parents were a school teacher and a factory worker. At university, he studied electrical engineering and also got involved in politics. He's a veteran of the Cuban Army. And after that, in the New York Times report, he was described as mixing with the intellectual class, going to concerts, close to young people. and not having the same dictatorial air about him as the Castros. People speak well of him. They don't speak of him in dictatorial fashion. So, who knows? Maybe a new day is dawning. Thank you very kindly. Very kindly indeed. To Charlene in Rhode Island. Asking the question, where are the beautiful tax refunds? Charlene answered Ralph's challenge and bettered it by another $70. So now we have gone down to only $520 in fundraising to go. Thank you, Charlene, so very much for all you do to keep this program on the air. Thank you very much indeed. Hopefully, Ralphs and Charlene will have a little company as we go through the remainder of the program. And with the Cuba story in mind, as we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable discussion, well, how about a blast from the past? A little something from Xavier Cugat. Yeah. Everybody dance! If that doesn't get your blood pumping, I don't know what will. Again, Xavier Cugat and his orchestra, courtesy of our good buddy, Reverbo the Human Boy, and Cuba Libre. Yeah. Thanks, Reverbo. Good call. Good call indeed. Reverbo described it as a satirical salute to Miguel Diaz-Canel, Cuba's new presidente. And thank you. Thank you very kindly. Like I said before, we've knocked down fundraising by from 650 to 520. Ooh, wait. If we can knock it down another $100, we'll have 420. We will have taken it down to 420 on 420. How's that some numerology for you? Yeah, that's big. Thank you. And so with another $70, we will have finished fundraising for last Wednesday. Another 270, we'll be finished with fundraising for last Wednesday and yesterday. Is that right? I don't know. I'm lost. Ciphering. Yeah. Anyway, let's run over to the Skype line. And again, a reminder, if you would like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, you have to use Skype. You can't call me on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. You can't use that contact. If you want to be part of the Skype group, you have to call on Skype using Skype to Skype, not a phone number to Skype, but Skype to Skype. There are limitations here until we, you know, find another, you know, $3,000 or so to replace the phone system. You got to use Skype to Skype. And you got to make your contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, on Skype. And then Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail to get into the conversation. And Sparky's waiting now. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. You know what? The Xavier Cugat thing, you got me thinking Ricky Ricardo was the first name that popped into my mind.
The Cuban everyone knows.
Desi Arnaz.
Yes. Yeah, this was...
But Ricky Ricardo's famous from the Lucy show. I Love Lucy.
Right. Xavier Cugat was quite famously married to... I think they were married, Carmen Miranda. And then, do you remember Charo?
Yes.
Yeah, even as an older gentleman, he was married to Charo.
You forget I'm 66 years old. I remember all that shit.
Yeah, and one hell of a band leader.
What was the name of Ricky Ricardo's band?
That I cannot tell you.
The YouTube video here, it says the Comanchero Band.
The Comanchero Band?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Ricky and the Comancheros. You know, that would have worked in the New Wave era as well.
That's just what I'm gleaning. But, you know, the famous song he used to do was Babaloo.
Mm-hmm. And that's about all I ever heard him sing.
You say things that set off my mind all the time.
Well, are you enjoying a lovely 420 today?
It's 420 here right now, isn't it? One more minute.
You are 40 seconds away from 420 on the West Coast.
Well, like I was telling you, in honor of 420, I cleaned the screens on my vape.
Ooh, well.
I got four mouthpieces that comes with the Hebe, and so I the way you clean them is you boil them in a pan of water,
mm-hmm.
and then like I said, told you in Skype, you can breathe the steam and you get like a contact high off of it.
Well, that we've come a long way from just scraping the resin and doing your best.
Well, yeah.
You know, because
roaches.
Yeah, but it gets it. You know, man. You know, you got to wiggle the screen and get all that, and it gets all over the place.
Well, they boil it out. It just cleans them right up, basically.
Yeah, I bet that's some potent resin too.
It's a good smell, I tell you.
Well, doggone it, it's 420, and it is now 420 on the Pacific Coast. Get with it, everybody. I'd celebrate with you. Had
legal,
I but
the legal here
to
in
do
California,
so.
If you can find it.
What do you mean if you can find it?
Well, in my county's a dry county.
So how far would you have to drive?
Oh, I'd have to drive back way up to Shasta Lake City. It's about, it's just north of Redding.
I was going to say, and how many miles in a way up?
Oh, it's probably around 35 to 40 miles.
It's about, well, dry county. How about that? A new definition to dry county.
You learn something new.
So did the people there in your county vote not to, I mean, how did it work?
Well, they have to issue business licenses to people to sell it, and they're not going to do it in my county.
Well, I mean, did that's what I'm asking. Did the state law allow them to unilaterally make that decision?
Yeah, I believe so. The only thing is they can't, you know, the recreational use of marijuana is now illegal in medical marijuana. There was a medical marijuana dispensary here, but I'm not sure if you can go there or not.
Probably not for recreational, but I bet you could qualify for medical.
And I'm sure there might be a place down in Chico I can get it. Oh, I think there is. I think they even got delivery services down in Chico.
Well, that just sounds...
They deliver to Chico, Oroville, and Yuba City, I think, but they don't come north.
Yeah, 80 degrees there. So, yeah, I'll go ahead. Yeah, shut it, Sparky. Right. Since we don't have Brother Deacon Gerald handy to do it for me.
Yeah, I got the window open and I'm listening to the doves going.
You know, I learned a fascinating new thing today after you clued me in about the almond crop and the freezing weather.
Well, I told you it was something was going on with the almond trees when I knew it was bad when the weather got warm.
And they bloomed?
No, they don't bloom. They bud. They bud first, and then they bloom.
Okay.
Well, it got cold, and it shocked the buds and killed them. You should have seen this big almond orchard to the northeast of my house. It looked, when it finally did bloom, it was sickly looking.
Well, I found out a fascinating thing. Did you know that it takes 1.1 gallons of water to produce one almond? Not one dozen, or not 1 pound. One almond.
I knew it took a lot of water, but I mean, they're using new systems on them now.
It takes one...
Because the rancher behind my house just put in an orchard, and he's got a drip system going to every tree.
Well, apparently almond production requires 1.1 gallons of water for every almond. So it sort of puts a new light on that Blue Diamond almond ad they used to run years ago of, what was it, just a can a day, that's all we ask. I mean, that's if there's 100 almonds in a can, that's 100 gallons of water.
Yeah. I worked years and years ago, about 1988, I believe. Yeah, it was 1988. I worked at Blue Diamond in Sacramento, putting in a new line, new blanching line or something for them. It was really a fun job. We had to take the PLCs, but the MCCs that controlled all the motors in the new line. And we had to bundle them all together so they could build the building around them. And then when we come back, we moved them all out to the walls and nailed them down. Yeah, MCC is a motor control center.
Okay.
And then my other memory of that job is working on the box dumpers and adjusting the banner eyes with a piece of cardboard.
Well, just remember, if you get the munchies, don't eat a romaine lettuce salad, okay? You'll be okay.
That's okay. I don't buy romaine lettuce.
Well, I see Billable Rick is with us this evening. Hey, Rick, are you handy?
You might be doing billable stuff. He said till 4:30.
Oh, okay. Well, he's 4 minutes away then.
He said he'd be listening. Okay, I got to add somebody here.
Meanwhile, Devin tells me they're growing rice in the desert in California. Hey, there's clarity.
They grow rice just south of me.
Yeah, but in the desert. Yeah.
Well, it's not desert here.
No, but they're growing rice, according to Devin, in the desert in California. One wonders how you do that. I don't think that's free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free, lactose-free, desert-proof rice. I think they probably uses a lot of water, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, the rice up here gets its water from the Sacramento River.
Right, by
the Tama-Calusa Canal.
That's the same.
Comes out of the river right here where I live.
That's the same rice that was noted as being chock full of mercury a few years back, if I recall correctly. Even the organic stuff.
Well, the river was polluted once upon a time with PCBs and stuff from an old Simpson paper mill that was up along the river.
Arsenic, too, as far as heavy metals go.
Yum, yum. Hey, Clarity.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I survived a trip to Portland and back with the lady who likes to listen to right-wing talk radio.
Ah, hence your dosage of Lars Larson.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there if I, escape, but you jump out of a car when it's going 60 miles an hour and... but the urge was there a while,
Did somebody say Mars Larson?
Lars Larson.
Mars Larson.
Yeah, well, he broadcasts from the Hoover Institution.
There you go.
At Stanford University, where there's lots of smart people.
Right, of course.
Who read books and stuff.
The topic today was... Oregon stuff, but the other thing was the kids protesting, 19-year anniversary of the Columbine massacre. And I was just thinking about it. It's like these kids are institutionalizing these schools and they're getting shot while they're supposed to be being protected. And I think they have a right to take a day off and protest.
I think they've got a right to petition the government for redress of grievances. You know, under that constitution thingy.
Anyway. I think they should sue their universities for negligence in terms of not having adequate security.
The lady that was driving me said, they should make those kids add it on at the end of the year. Just when they take these days off, just add it on, take it out of their summer. And it's like, God, we didn't... They broke a bunch of people protesting because we couldn't stop the Vietnam War. And, we almost burned down the whole country to get it stopped. And these kids are, trying to start something before it becomes a fucking civil war, over, who's right and who's wrong. Anyway, he read a couple letters, emails from his listeners. And one lady wrote in and said, I found out from one of my children's friends that they're taking a busload of kids to Salem today to protest gun laws and da-da-da. And she goes, if that's true, I'm going to have that teacher that takes them down there, I'm going to have them their license taken away because that's a conflict of interest. They shouldn't be brainwashing. And then Lars goes, yeah, the liberal education system. It's no wonder people are going to the private, you know, private schools and charter schools.
Yeah, that liberal education system, it's no wonder people have indoor plumbing now and don't understand how important it is to shit in the woods.
And then the other thing was the ads for governor. There's six guys running against Kate Brown on the Republican side. And the guy that's leading right now in the polls, Dr. Newt Johnson, I think is his name. I'm going, I couldn't see saying Newt, Governor Newt. But they've been, saying that, you know, she's just, her spending's out of control. She's, you know, she's trying to stabilize the Oregon health plan. And she passed a surcharge on small businesses. I can't remember what it is, but anyway, it came out to be, like $1 billion or something to get the budget back into, you know, so it's feasible to be close on the budget. And then she had a special session and allowed some exemptions, but this is the figures they use. There's 260,000 small businesses in Oregon, which employ 70% of the labor force. And only 9,000 out of those 260,000, only about 3%, actually it's more than 3%, but he just rounded, got an exemption. And that's what they're campaigning on, that, you know, it was just a trick to get this pushed through. And then Larson's spin out was, you know, this is money that you would have gotten raises. This is money that you would have got your bonuses and all this from, and the governor's taking it away from you. She's stealing our prosperity with these, you know, liberally radical social welfare programs. And God.
I think somebody should point out to old lawyers about how prosperous Kansasistan is because of all the tax cuts that they had, huh?
Oh, I think the problem is that the conservatives have got their message out a lot better, and we've fought a sales tax forever. But Oregon is like 37th. I mean, we're lower tax rate than Mississippi per capita.
How does Oregon have a functioning state government with so little taxes?
Well, at one time we got money. We had a lot of timber stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
Taxes from that. And then there's, you know, a property tax.
Your property taxes must be really high then.
Yeah.
Something's got to compensate for other things, a lack of other taxes,
well,
right?
They basically they fund local schools. Are on property taxes, and there's an income tax, state income.
Okay, that was my next question. I figured you must have had an income tax. You know, the thing I noticed about Oregon when I visited there like many years ago is a lot of towns do not have sidewalks. Is that still the case?
Oh yes, the street I live on, I've talked to the zoning department, and there's no plan to widen my street or put, you know, an easement off for sidewalks, even though there's people walking up and down it on both sides of the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Just go by. But the other right of way is owned by the railroad, and they don't want to give up any of their easement.
Mm.
And, you know, and the city doesn't want to spend it on a street that doesn't have, you know, there's a bunch of vacant lots.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a residential neighborhood, they can usually, you know, raise their assessment enough to get, you know, their streets paved and rain, you know, gutters and all that stuff.
So let me ask you this. I don't know if you were, I think I might have mentioned about that that Rajneeshi thing that was going on in the early 80s, documentary I watched.
That's in Central Oregon, yeah.
Are you close to Rajneesh Purim or whatever that town was called?
That's about 3 hours away.
Oh, is that east of you or what?
No, it's south east of me.
Okay. Yeah, I found that fascinating, that whole story, you know. You know, lots of intrigue. I mean, you know,
yes.
Who would ever guess that they would have poisoned 700 people by putting E. coli and stuff at the salad bars, or no, salmonella, I think.
Oh yeah, at the recreation. Cafe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they had their own medical lab too, where they actually manufactured toxins. You know, it's like, well, geez.
I mean, they were, most of them were people that were very wealthy, you know, middle class, upper middle class, you know, that had money, and they, you know, were well educated.
So, yeah, they were looking for enlightenment is what they were looking for.
Yeah, well, isn't everybody?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, there you go.
I mean,
well, you just have to listen to Friday on the Front Porch for enlightenment. Come on, right?
Oh,
right, Clarity?
That's why I just sit and listen and don't indulge myself too much, because, you know, I the smarter I get, the more I know I don't know. You know?
Yeah, well, you learn more by listening than you do by talking. Actually, you don't learn anything by talking.
No, it's just a good way to keep your wind going.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I don't know if you've ever listened to Rupert Sheldrake. He does research on animal ESP.
Oh, no.
Well, he's a very interesting person. He's a, I think he's like a Cambridge or Oxford biologist. And when he found out that biology was mostly like, you know, dissection and stuff, he changed into psychophysiology or something like that.
Okay.
But anyway, he's, it does research on ESP and what he has a term that he's trying to, a unified kind of thing, energy theory, that there's something called a morphic field. And that's how birds navigate, you know, in large clusters, because there's the information is all around them. And he thinks that's, you know, what ESP is just connecting to energy instead of processing things visually. Anyway, just check him out, Rupert Sheldrake.
Rupert Sheldrake, S-H-E-L-D-R-A-Y?
No, Drake.
Oh, Sheldrake. Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm slurring my words.
That's okay.
Anyway, yesterday I did an interview with this doctoral student research on medical care. And, well, I guess I've broken my confidentiality on four before here on the show, on transgender care in rural areas. And just asked me what kind of things I've encountered, good, bad, what things I like, what things I don't like. And, you know, if I would have done it a year ago, it probably would have been really triggering for me. But the more times I and everything, it gets easier. And I appreciate you guys, you know, staying with me on this.
Oh, yeah, you've got a home here, and you've got you also deal in particular with a topic that other people might not even know is an issue or of concern. Were you not bringing it up, Clarity?
Well, that's so. At the thing I wanted to, you know, just realize or to just bring across is that, you know, I'm like an alien, somewhat. You know, when I go places, I don't know. Even when I'm passing, I'm still wondering why they're staring at me. And, you know, kids chuckling and giggling.
You're like an Englishman in New York, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're an alien, an illegal alien.
Yeah, but I understand now the trans woman that I played music with when I lived in the Bay Area, I probably mentioned this before, she had nights when she couldn't go on because her anxiety was too high. And then, you know, what's called internalized transphobia, you know, you get kind of stuck between your old body and your new body. And it's, you know, it's kind of disorienting and it's kind of disturbing, you know, kind of like when you're on acid and you go from clarity to, you know, everything starts melting. And
yeah, I guess the melting part was kind of what helped me make the no more acid decision.
Yeah. Well, you should microdose, Bob.
Well, I kind of thought I was. I didn't think there was any other kind of. I didn't think there was any other kind of acid dose.
Well, that's what I thought. But one of the last few times I had a rebirthing experience, and it was only on two hits out of a four-way hit of my window pane, and I saw myself, you know, coming out of the womb and seeing these guys with smocks looking down at me, and then hanging by, seeing the floor, and somebody hit me on the back. And then I realized I was listening to Wayne Shorter.
Well, Clarity, you got a note in from Scott and Punky in San Diego. Ixnay on the animal ESP. Please tell Clarity to hush her mouth about that animal ESP and paranormal powers stuff. That's all I need. Punky bending all my good spoons and chirps the cat, knowing what I'll do before I do it. Hell, I don't even know what I'm going to do before I do it. That gets a cowbell.
Well, Dr. Sheldrake, he means well. He means well. And if it encourages your bunkmate there, I didn't mean to bring any notions to your devoted aviary friend.
Yeah, I wouldn't turn my back on Punky in a minute.
Yeah. You saw that picture, that baseball player that the eagle clawed into his back?
No. What?
I can't remember what team it was, but they had an eagle there that was supposed to fly out and land on the mound. And instead, he tried to land on the tallest guy that was on the field. And he landed on his back and had his talons out.
My favorite eagle image at this point in time is the time that a bald eagle got near Donald Trump and just about scared him into soiling himself.
I wish he would have taken his face off.
Well, that's right up there with the Miss Piggy, Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags image.
Oh, you!
I'm still not over that.
I was guffawing about that one. Yeah, that was good, Bob. You had some good timing. Was that Wednesday?
I think that was last night.
Oh, was it last night? Well, it's been a long day.
Well, look, they all kind of run together after a while. I'm sorry.
Well, I know, Bob. I know they do. And when, you know, last week when I was going from that to Malloy and you trying to be Malloy and going, hey, he does a pretty good impression. Just doesn't sound like Malloy.
I don't think it's possible to actually, you know, do an impression of Mike. Because it's in what the billable Rick will recognize this phrase. Malloy is in the totality of the circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great.
But I did just see one thing come across my email, and I confess I'm excited. Agnes gets a birthday gift Sunday. The birthday of Agnes, the Viking warrior Pharaoh princess, is Sunday, and Sunday marks the return of Westworld to HBO. So I know what we're doing Sunday.
Oh, well, check your video mail in the next couple of days. I'll send you a birthday song for her.
Oh, absolutely. That would be wonderful.
I'd love to do that.
I will make sure that I bring Agnes in here and play it for her on the Skype machine.
All right. Gives me something to think about.
Now, you weren't here last weekend. Did you have that gig you were talking about when we talked before?
No, I was just laying low.
Okay. Well, so but you said you were looking forward to a a gig and.
Oh, that was Saturday.
Oh, okay. Seven.
And yeah, that was a good gig. We packed the house. They had lines at the bar trying to get drinks, and that's always a good sign.
Well, you might have enjoyed the. It was Carrie Nation and the something, and they're out of Lexington, Kentucky, and they played the Grove last Friday night over in Fayetteville. And you want to talk about an eclectic band? It's not every now and then. It's not just every day that you get a sort of punkish attitude band with a clarinet, a saxophone, and a trumpet. I mean, they would have, were it not for the amplification, they would have been, more than anything else, they reminded me of something you might have seen in a cabaret in Berlin in 1929.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, there were noises being made that weren't necessarily recognizable on the traditional scale, and it was fun as hell.
Well, that's classic dance music, and it's not hard on the ears. That happened after, we started playing bop came in, and some people just don't like modern jazz. And that's a great sound, that clarinet and trumpet blend. It's a nice combo sound, but there aren't that many people that can play the damn clarinet. It's a tough instrument. At least that's been my experience.
Now I'm trying to. Trying to find the name of the band, but oh well.
I've written down Carrie Nation. I'll look it up.
But it's like the Carrie Nation and the Prohibition, whatever, or the.
Oh, okay.
But it's Carrie Nation and I can't remember what the and the part, but I do know they're out of Lexington, and they were a real blast to listen to.
So it's like a jump band then, more like a.
I wouldn't know really what to call it. I mean, there was an accordion, for Christ's sakes. Sometimes,
oh, okay.
Sometimes they sounded like a punk klezmer outfit.
Oh, so it's like Django music. That's what I'd call it. Django jazz.
Yeah. The keyboards, drums, bass, couple of guitars. And then every now and then, trumpets, clarinets, saxophones, and accordions. What's not to like?
Well, that was a very successful sound. And then we went totally electronic. And we kind of, I think, lost a little bit of that style and sound. And people are going back to those organic sounds because they're in our genes. That music's in our genes that our grandparents danced to. So in a way, there's kind of a genetic echo, why we respond to that music, even though we haven't heard it that much, younger people.
Yeah, because I haven't heard it that much. And immediately it's like, oh, this is something different. By the way, a note just came in from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, cool. So Agnes's birthday is also Earth Day. Yes, it is. And I checked once, and I think her birthday is also, it wasn't. We had a big book of birthdays, and I'm trying to forget, she had some notorious individual. Let's see. Oh, I think I got it here. Maybe I need to go backwards. Oh, yeah, I got to go way back.
We're going to set the way back machine.
Exactly. I thought it was I thought it was Mao Tse-tung, but no. Well, April 22nd is also Peter Frampton's birthday, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's something.
Do you feel what I feel?
Yeah, do you feel like we do?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a flashback coming home from a gig one night, and that came on. And it was just like I was...
Oh, hey, Charlie Mingus.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she's got that going.
So
is that
in Taurus? Or she's...
No, she's in... Yeah, she's definitely Taurus. She's so Taurus.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because Mingus was... Definitely
that. Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is. Yes, April 22nd, 1870, the birthday of V.I. Lenin.
The Red Minutes.
But also the birthday of Vladimir Nabokov. All right, yeah, so it was Lenin. Ferg. Ferg shares a birthday with Chairman Mao. Okay. It all becomes so clear now.
You know? You guys are a bunch of commies, Bob.
Well, you know, what do you want?
What do you expect?
Radical leftists.
Yep.
Well, they were also talking about, they built this jail in for county jail for Multnomah County, and they dropped $60 million on it, and they never used it. And now, 10 years or so after it was built, this developer got it for $5 million, and Lars was just going off about it. City spends $60 million with $500,000 a year for maintenance costs, and we give it away. And the taxpayers are still paying on those bonds.
Well, why'd they build it in the first place?
Well, because we were having to let people out of jail because the jails were overcrowded. And they're still doing that, but because they had a guy, a young woman die in jail that had a mental illness, and they didn't do the right intervention on her. So they said they were understaffed or something, you know. So they had to drop their population. But, you know, it was just... I could tell we were listening to a right-wing program, even though that's all this woman listens to that drives me. Because even the guys that were doing the morning zoo stuff were talking about tax and taxpayers and the working tax. You know, it was like every sentence had the word tax in it. And when you listen to, you know, a progressive comic routine, that word doesn't come up. You know, I don't, you know, unless they're talking about, you know, right-wing politics and, you know, the Trump tax plan or something like that. But that's what they're going at Kate Brown about, that, you know, she just keeps raising these taxes and we just got to get her in hand, you know. And then, you know, campaigning on, well, I'm a social liberal, but a fiscal conservative. Whatever that means. You know, I'm socially liberal, but I don't want to pay for it, basically. You know, yeah, I think we should take care of people, but let them go to the food banks. And, oh, I remember the other thing they were talking about today. They you know, when they raised the sugar tax in Mexico, their obesity problem started to level off. And just by raising the, you know, 10 cents on a soda. People were drinking less soda. Well, they did that in New York, I think, or anyway. And their comments were, well, why should we be paying this tax on sugar when it's just these people's fault? They drink too much soda. That's their choice, but we shouldn't be paying for their health care. Well, blah, 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 because they were taking the money from the tax and using it for funding health programs. You know, why should I, you know, a tax worker, taxpayer, be paying this extra tax? Because there's fat people, basically what they were saying.
Just don't drink soda.
Well, that's it. If they don't want to pay the tax, don't buy that product, because there isn't any other food that's, you know, as far as I know, is taxed that you can get, you know, with your food stamps, your government approved, you know, dietary list.
Even like here in California, I don't know how people afford to smoke anymore.
Oh, cigarettes? Jesus.
$7 and something a pack.
Yeah, and they're preying on people that are addicted. And the tobacco companies have gotten out of a lot of those things that, you know, they were supposed to be paying for education programs and treatment programs and all this. No, it's been thrown back on the states. And the health costs, you know, we're all paying for the fact that tobacco is still legal. You know, it should be prescribed. I mean, to think of all the people that die from it every year.
Yeah, just like we're going to do with cannabis in West Virginia. You can't actually smoke it. You can only take it in pill, tincture, oil, or stuff it up your ass form.
Well, it has a lot more uses now than just your old hash pipe, you know. cannabis is grown up.
Oh yeah, you just hash under glass. My goodness gracious, I hadn't thought about that in ages.
Did you also come across that Oregon has an overproduction problem?
No.
they only sold 350,000 pounds last year. But they have registered, produced, and, you know, certified 1.1 million pounds of marijuana because it was a good year. The year before, they, you know,
you gotta let the free market figure out supply and demand there after you,
well,
in the first couple
exactly.
of years. And
but the way they promote it, you know, the headlines coming up in the morning news. Next up, Oregon is too good growing weed.
Now, somebody tell John Boehner. I bet we know where some of that excess will go.
Well, one of the stories was that because it was a dry year and a fairly hot year last year, that the outdoor people had a really huge crop. And so the indoor people, which it costs more to grow indoors, but you can control the conditions and you can guarantee, you know, your product's going to be, you know, of a certain strength and stuff. So, but they haven't got a price support, you know, for indoor. I think that's what would solve it. What would solve it also is if it was legal nationally and Oregon could become the, you know, like the San Fernando Valley is for growing, you know, our salad crops. Oregon could be, you know, growing our recreational, because we got the hops here to make the beer. We got the, you know, we got the weed, and the climate. So
maybe Trump will legalize it.
Well, you know, I think he wants more people to like him, and I think if he did that and acted like, you know, he was pushing Sessions around, you know, he likes to push Sessions around.
Yeah, well, Sessions was going to challenge the states that have recreational marijuana and go after prosecute people for, you know, for recreational marijuana violations.
Well, and
you know, federal violations, but Trump basically told him, no, you can't do that. You can't spend any money for doing that.
Well,
even though the law didn't address that issue.
Well, Josephine County, right on the California border, they have a lot of illegal grows there, people coming up, you know, across the border and putting mm-hmm. in national forest stuff. They want to have the feds come in and make it illegal in Josephine County, like they have this one county in Colorado.
Hmm.
That's illegal.
Oh, speaking of Confederate, I mean, United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions III. Interesting story out of the Washington Post. Their alert says only, and if we think about this for a minute, it's almost like some sort of you know, high sign or something. Not, well, there's that word high on 420. Sessions told the White House that Rosenstein's firing could prompt his departure, too.
Oh.
Well, hell, how would dipshit Donnie not see that as a win-win situation?
Well, they said today on the right-wing radio, they said they're both sides are saying it's a win. And then they said Rosenstein assured Trump that the investigation wasn't targeted on him. How does he know?
Well, Rosenstein gets reports from Mueller, but there's no way he can know the actual day-to-day.
No. And how can
he's
he know?
He's still a subject, just not target.
Right.
No, yeah, he's not a target, because you know.
But more and more.
But no, I guess he can say that with a straight face, couldn't he? You're not the target of the investigation.
No, you're not a target. And just because he leaves out the word yet, it doesn't make it a lie. But he's damn he's damn sure a subject of it. And you know, when you say you're not, that doesn't mean that a whole lot of folks near and dear to him aren't. By the way, we are at a little bit past the beginning of the third hour of the program. I want to send out thanks, big thanks to Vince. Thank you very, very kindly for jumping in. We have a brand new subscriber. Yay! Wait a minute, cowbell for new subscriber. And that means that there's the first month subscription will get doubled for Vince, courtesy of Tony and Chico. And we need $85 more in new subscribers, either at PayPal or Patreon. Works fine either way. But thank you very kindly to Vince. And that also means the Vince subscribed via PayPal. That means that we've only got $505 to raise now to finish off the week. And if we were to do that, that would only leave one day of fundraising, Monday, and then the rest of it's fundraising free radio for the remainder of the month. So thank you, Vince, and thank you very kindly to Charlene, and thank you very, very kindly to Ralphs for what they've done thus far this evening, and hopefully they'll have some company.
One more thing.
Yeah, go. Yeah, go ahead.
The attacks on Hillary Clinton never quit. Today, they said Hillary Clinton is the Starbucks of politics. She's burnt out and bitter and full of self-congratulatory speaking.
They're really falling off their game since way back when. I mean, I can remember during the Clinton administration when the oxymoron would get behind the microphone and say, "My friends, I just got back from KFC. They've got a Hillary Clinton special going. Two small breasts and a left wing. Ha, 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 ha." Or one of the other ones. And you know, when you think about those tired old chestnuts, it's a reminder that of just how long that sleaze fest went on, and as you note, Clarity is still going on. There's the other one that, and again, I heard these because I used to drive around and I would hear, you know, the oxymoron on the air. And the other one I remember is, "My friends, why is it that Hillary Clinton doesn't wear short skirts? She doesn't want anyone to see her testicles. Ha, 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 ha." You know, assholes. But, yeah. Wait a minute, we just got a note from Robert in Australia. $7 for a packet of cigarettes? Did somebody just say that? Cigarettes are set to reach $40 a pack here in Australia after the next tax increase. Robert says, "I've never smoked, so it's not an issue for me." God almighty.
Well, as high as you get on one cigarette, $2 doesn't sound too bad.
I mean, if cigarettes are that expensive in Australia, they must have a hell of a time, you know, with the untaxed cigarette trade, you know, the cigarette smuggling. That's got to be a huge industry there.
They cut off their hands, I think, though.
Pretty much. You got to sell your firstborn almost, it sounds like, to smoke there.
Oh, I've got a fun, because this is fun.
Do they even grow tobacco in Australia?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I know if in Australia to buy, because, you know, they can have Cuban cigars in Australia. To buy a box of Cuban cigars and pay the Australian tax on that, you just about have to contact your banker. So, yeah. No, I've got a great little story here. I love it when gun goobers go at each other over the sufficiency of one gun goober's devotion to guns over another gun goober's devotion to guns. And down in Georgistan, you got a couple of gun humpers by the name of State Senator David Schaefer, and he's running for the lieutenant governor position there. And he's running against a fella by the name, where'd it go? Former State Senator Rick Jeffers, Jeffers. What kind of name is that? Well, Rick Jeffers don't think David Schaefer is sufficiently adoring and worshipful to the right worshipful gun culture. This is beautiful. The NRA, in the primary, the NRA endorsed David Schaefer. And the NRA said, he's a voice for freedom and faithful friend to Georgia's law-abiding gun owners, and he has unwavering support for the Second Amendment. This did not sit at all well with former Senator Jeffers. And he responded, David reads his gun talking points well. I want to see if he knows which end of a shotgun the shells go in. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported on him and said that Jeffers has had a hunting license for decades. He takes, they're kind of like, they're the Von Trapp shooting family. Wait a minute. God damn it, I'm giving myself a cowbell for Von Trapp shooting family. Because he takes his whole family to international shooting competitions. And not too awful long back, when they was expecting a baby, they announced the baby's gender by, wait for it, hockey puck warning, by shooting a pink balloon with an AR-15.
Instead of like the white smoke or the black smoke, I suppose, like the Vatican uses, huh, Bob?
Yeah, they shot a pink balloon with a pink AR-15. I don't know if the AR-15 was pink, but... Did the
balloon have helium in it or something?
Who knows? No, I think they just... I'm guessing they just tied it to a tree. You know, it's Georgia, after all.
I'm surprised they just didn't shoot a Vestal Virgin or something like that, Bob.
But they were the thing is, they were supposed to... They were supposed to be attending an event this very day at the Cherokee Rose Gun Club, and Jeffers said, I want to challenge him to a clay pigeon shooting contest. And I'll bring.
Don't tell me it's with the AR-15.
I'll bring an extra 12 gauge in case he don't have one. And see, Jeffers says it's not just enough for David Schaefer to be
a voice for freedom and faithful friend to Georgia's law-abiding gun owners with unwavering support for the Second Amendment. Because Jeffers says, by God, if he wins, Jeffers says he'll fight to protect and expand Second Amendment rights. Not just protect them as they are, but he's going to expand them. Make everybody shoot pink balloons with an AR-15, or maybe a blue balloon if they have a little baby boy. God damn, kid. Pull! Next thing, Senator Schaefer finds himself flying through the air. Oops, wrong pigeon. Blam! Mm. Sorry, I saw that. I giggled merrily to myself.
Man up with 12 gauge.
I don't know if he knows which end of the shotgun the shell goes in.
Was it over and under?
We don't know. I'm just going to bring him a spare 12 gauge. I'm reckoning it's probably a pump action, if not a semi-automatic 12 gauge.
Over and under is the best skeet gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't have but two shells in it.
Well, you're not supposed to have any more.
Well, you do if you love the Second Amendment, Sparky. There you go with that commie talk again.
You pull out the plug and you get 7 shots.
Damn right, by God. Clarity knows her shotguns. You know,
if you're shooting competition, you only got one coming from the left and one coming from the right, so you only need 2 shots.
But when you're shooting against your lieutenant governor rival, Sparky, you want multiple, because sometimes you got to lead him a little bit.
You want to show that you're innovative and patriotic. Show that your magazine's bigger than his.
Magazines well, bigger, shells are bigger, guns are bigger.
All the shotguns left this house.
Jeez. I mean, of all the firearms out there, shotguns are, how can I say it? They're kind of elegant. Especially the ones with, like, the Browning side-by-sides with all the engraving. And I mean, I knew a guy once who literally had his savings in firearms, and he had his federal firearms license, and he had safes just full of guns, and he said, I can sell this faster than I can sell a gold coin if I have to. And around here, that's the absolute truth.
The last time I logged into the Majority Report, you know, to watch the podcast, the first ad that came up was for gun safes. And I don't know how that algorithm fits with people that listen to the Majority Report. But I thought it was kind of odd. Yeah, our safes are good up to 1,900 degrees. Guaranteed. It's like...
God bless America.
Yeah. I guess you don't want them to survive the fire of the Holocaust from the nuclear blast. You know. So you can, you know, get out there. Wolverines!
Yep. Wait a minute. I'll give you one of those.
I bet you there was a bunch.
There you go.
Bet you there was a bunch of them that got burned up in Santa Rosa.
Oh yeah.
You mean they just let them poor innocent guns just burn in the fires? That's disgusting. That's almost as sickening as Dick's Sporting Goods killing all them innocent AR-15s and melting them down and sending them off to be turned into soup cans or whatnot.
Yeah, speaking of the fires, Marin County had some pretty severe flooding because all the trees are gone upriver there. I mean, Stinson Beach had horrible erosion.
Do you see that flood that just hit Kauai in Hawaii?
Oh, my God, yeah, that's nasty.
That looked like Philippines in a hurricane or something. What it reminded me of.
There's a whole bunch of weird weather events this past week.
Yeah, well, it's...
They're showing up on a Washington Post article. I saw the videos of them. all over the country.
When you got that global warming, you've got more water vapor, and it creates more turbulence, you know. And with the currents changing, I don't know if you've heard, they said that the Gulf Stream has lost 15% of its volume. That's a lot of heat that's not going, you know, into Europe. And it could change the water patterns and nutrients and they're saying that's part of the reason, you know, the melt from Greenland is lowering the salinity, which means that the water has more volume. I guess because of the ionic part of the salt makes the water a little bit more dense. I guess that would make sense. But when you do it over that scale, and they said that it, you know, I mean, the water's going to, the eastern Atlantic's going to have more water rising than they've, in the models that they're using now, if the Gulf Stream changes. And remember they talked about that after Macombo when they had that, and they put all that Crexit stuff into the Gulf, that they said it was affecting, you know, because it changed the albedo of the ocean, heated it up, and broke the cycle. And, you know, those things, that's a lot of energy shift. It could have caused a turbulence that, you know, changed the whole system in the Atlantic. And all, you know, all the forests that have been lost in Indonesia and that changes the heat cycle in the southern hemisphere.
Oh, by the way, an update on Australia and tobacco.
you're putting all those things together, and it didn't happen just, you know, because out of random stuff. I think we definitely got our fingers on the scale.
Oh, most likely.
I mean, we've had, it's always windy around here, but we've had, you know, days on days where it's averaging like 20 to 24 miles an hour all day long. And
the wind down here has been horrific this year.
Yeah.
Well, past few months.
Yeah, I've been up on my roof two or three times.
I mean, I got a lot of limb damage. It played hell with a redwood tree.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to do some work on one of my trees here, right up against the house. But it shades my south side, so I don't want to do too much to it.
There's a big limb on the redwood tree about 50 feet up. It's just hanging. I can see it.
A widowmaker, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to be under that.
So what, are you going to call it?
They usually come straight down.
Is that what you're just waiting for, or are you going to get it dealt with?
No, there's nothing I can do with it. It's 50 feet up in the air.
You'd have to
leap more and more. Hell, that tree's over 100 foot tall.
When my friend's parrot got away, he found it about a mile away from his house up in this tall tree. And he called this place and these two guys from Honduras. And the guy just climbed right up the tree and caught the bird and brought it down. And he said it was about 80 feet up.
You have to send Ferg back out here, Bob, because he wanted to climb that damn tree when he was here. And I said, you ain't climbing that tree.
Well, you know, I think he may have wised up a little bit since he screwed up his shoulder so well.
Yeah.
Learning curve. No, I was going to say a minute ago that Robert just afforded us a little bit deeper glimpse into tobacco in Australia. According to the subject line, it's illegal to grow tobacco in Australia.
Huh.
Taxes on cigarettes bring in about $12 to $15 billion a year for the federal government. It's been illegal to grow tobacco in Australia since 2006. The Australian Tax Office and the police have busted a few illegal tobacco crops in recent years. Tobacco smuggling operations have also been busted. You cannot advertise cigarettes in any medium, and especially not at the point of sale. Cigarettes are hidden behind locked metal panels. And in fact, like people who would be familiar with, say, a package of Marlboros or the iconic Camel Pack, unless I'm wrong, they're all just white packs with black lettering that say these things will fucking kill you. I mean, they got extremely proactive and extremely serious about tobacco in Australia. But my God, what kind of? I guess a lot of people have probably moved to roll your owns. That's usually what happens around here. The main major brands are expensive, and then there's a step down brands that are floor sweepings, and they're less expensive. And then there's just loose tobacco, and you roll your own. Or you buy one of the little rolling gizmos that you can put a filter in too.
And also, what poor people are doing is buying those little cigars because they're not taxed on the same tax rate as cigarettes are.
Even though they've got filters, and even though
yeah.
But they're grape flavored and peach flavored and mango flavored, and that can't be good for you either.
No, and San Francisco is trying to ban flavored tobacco products in the city and county, and they're getting a lot of backbeat from the tobacco lobby, but it's aimed at kids more than anything else. It makes it sweet and seductive, not like smoking your dad's Camel Straights,
Yeah.
Back in the day, you get dizzy and go, wow, what was that?
Wow. Usually I'm the one with noises like that in the background.
That was a Chevelle SS96, probably about a 74.
Ooh, sweet.
Yeah, cherried out too. Yeah, I live between two body and fender shops, so I see a lot of nice old cars drive by here.
Oh, even Arthur tells me, even Columbia. Arthur says, when I went back 2 years ago after 20 years of absence, they put those pictures of destroyed lungs and cancer and such on cigarette packs in Columbia. So, other countries continue to wise up.
Well, and they're starting to put warning labels now on alcohol. And in Mexico, they have for quite some time. I remember when I went down in the 80s first time, and there was warning labels on liquor bottles.
Well, when you think about what the Trump regime recently did to, what they announced with regard to the California fuel economy standards, I would not be surprised. I mean, because even here in West Virginia, other parts of the country, it's not surprising to pick up a product that's sold nationally and find a statement on it. This product contains substances known to the state of California to cause cancer.
Yes.
I'll bet you there's somebody, some little maggot somewhere, working diligently away to try to get the Trump regime to go after California for saying things are cancer-causing that the federal government isn't saying are cancer-causing.
Oh, they'd love to get rid of right-to-know laws.
Yeah.
They would love that.
Well, again, with the poop-tainted romaine lettuce, it's not like Peter Cottontail went romping through the romaine in Yuma and just had a bout of, rabbit spray diarrhea. No, it's in the processing, but the reason the CDC had to issue its warning the way it did is because we have no idea where shit comes from. Well, I mean, not shit, but we have no idea where, you know, it could have come from Yuma. It could have come from the Central Valley of California. God only knows.
Yeah. Well, in Oregon, the Department of Health requires where there's, you know, workers that are working, you know, all day long, that there be facilities supplied to them. And when I see the day worker vans going out, they have on the towing behind them a
Port-a-John.
Port-a-John with them. And that's where a lot of it goes, is because these workers are out in the field 4 miles from the nearest outing house, and they just, while they're working, they pee, you know, and the other things they do. And then when they irrigate, it gets spread all over the field. So I know where it's coming from. It's coming from farmers that are cutting corners for, you know, their workers, sanitation and that. And it's an additional expense, but that's how you lessen the chances of that happening.
Ah, capitalism, cutting corners.
Well, especially when, you know, the farmers are working on some very small margins. You know, that's why a lot of the smaller farmers are failing, because they can't do the scale where they, you know, high enough that they can get by on, you know, 1% or 2% return. They have a bad year. A small farmer has a bad year, and they've, you know, they're up to their eyeballs just to buy seed. And, you know, the Willie Nelson story, you know, people still losing farms right and left. And, you know, a lot of the small farms are pretty efficient and take better care of the soils and everything else. Remember when I was talking about that big dairy just upwind from me here?
Right, yeah.
Well, they just got fined, and they haven't, you know, they're not even operating at full capacity. They got fined by the Oregon DEQ for improper disposal of animal waste. So they're already, you know, putting water, you know, the cow piss where it doesn't belong. So all of my suspicions about, you know, it being a major source of nitrogen free in the, you know, the part of the county are true. You know, they bought somebody out to get the zoning easement and get through all their inspections, and it's a different story now that they're in operation. Because on the east side of the state, they're all Republicans, and the inspectors are basically Republicans. So, you know, it's like we're kind of the free-range libertarian side of the state, in a way. Greg Walden's side. And there's four Democrats running against him, and they're all a little bit too intellectual, I think, to move anybody away from the Walden camp. The only thing I'm hoping is young people, most all of them are registering Democrat, and we have vote by mail. You know, who knows? We may get rid of Walden eventually. But this district is so gerrymandered. So, I don't know.
I'm surprised your district is as gerrymandered as it is, considering the fact that you've got a better legislative makeup in the state than, say, you know, Mississippi, Stan, or Alabama.
No, that's just it. But 2/3 of the state is, you know, rural and conservative, and in that respect, a lot of the people have those family values, you know, of the South. Without what I call is the Mississippi without the river, you know.
Yeah.
We're Mississippi without the river.
Mississippi without the biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, you can't get them here.
Well, you've received fan mail from Jim Clarity. Jim says Clarity really brings so much to this program. I'm truly impressed. So, you've received the Jim seal of approval.
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, you guys talk about politics, which I enjoy, but, you know, and adding what I've you know, picked up from my end of my research. And then you talk about sports, and I've, you know, I just don't have much to say about sports. I think, you know, I guess in a way, politics is my sport. I like talking about music, even though it's going the way of the stenographer.
You know, oh, did you see where that 28-year-old Swedish worldwide phenomenon dance club DJ died today?
Yeah, I didn't read the how it happened or you know.
I guess he quit touring a couple of years ago because he was in failing health. And 28 years old, passed away today in Oman, I think.
He was still working then.
Or you know, he'd made enough money that he retired to, you know. I don't know why you'd want to, well, I don't know. If you're Swedish, maybe you'd like to live in Oman for a while, but, yeah. I'm guessing the healthcare might have been better in Sweden.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things with DJ work, you know, working nights, a lot of drugs and alcohol, and, you know, bad sleeping patterns, which is stressful, as we're finding out now that people that sleep during the day.
You dropped out after we're finding out people who sleep during the day. What?
Oh, they're saying that sleeping during the day has, you know, a deleterious effect on longevity. It's, you know, stressful on the heart and people more prone to diabetes and obesity and, you know.
Wait, I thought the concept of siesta was supposed to be beneficial.
Well, they're talking about people, they're night owls that stay up late and then sleep into the
day. Oh, you mean folks that work the midnight shift?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. I know I do better when I get to bed early and get up early. It's like, you know, once the sun comes up and I try to sleep, all I get is my body wakes up and then I wake up and it's like, oh. But if I get up when it's around the crack of dawn, I usually do better. And I'm not sure what that's all about, but I've, you know, been in all different patterns when I worked shift work and played music and worked a day job. And, you know, so that's my wisdom for today.
Well, we're daytime creatures. We don't have night vision.
No.
So evolutionarily speaking, I think we're probably day hunters.
My shins will testify to that.
Yeah, walking into the occasional corner of the coffee table kind of thing.
Yeah, I had a friend. He's blind, and his first wife, when she was mad at him, she'd move the furniture.
That's an old Helen Keller joke now, Clarity. Dadgum it.
Well, he learned to echolocate really well. He'd walk in the room and snap his fingers, and he knew she'd move the furniture. But, you know, but he was a musician. He drank a lot back in the day, so I'm sure there was a little bit of impairment involved, too.
Yeah, unfortunately, growing up as I did, a few scant miles from Helen Keller's birthplace.
Oh, you've heard them all.
Every last one of them. Then I'm not going to do it. It's not. They're funny. They're funny. And I like to think Miss Keller might have even laughed at them, but that's one of them. Rearrange the furniture.
Well, and people are not, most people aren't aware of the fact that she was a very devoted socialist.
Oh, God, no, she's one of my heroes. And she was probably Ferg's first hero. He was absolutely transfixed when, at the well there where the miracle happened, they've got it fenced off and you can't just go up to it. But when I took him through Ivy Green, her birthplace and where she grew up, he was so transported and he was like, so this was her, and you know, looking and just taking in everything, and the guy, and it was cold, it was March, and the guide walked us out to the pump veranda or whatever, where the well pump is, and said, you know, we don't do this for everybody. And she unlocked the gate and opened it and said, go ahead, you can touch the pump. And Ferg back then, oh God, that would be 12 years ago. So he's maybe 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, his mouth was just hanging open. He couldn't believe it. And he laid his hands on the pump and oh my, and it was just changed. No, she really is. She's a hero of mine. She was a socialist. She was also very much an anti-war advocate. And that,
yeah, that's right. She was a pacifist. Yeah.
And that got her some heat along the way as well.
Sure.
Let me jump in here real quick. 24 minutes before the hour, we got $505 to go. To finish the week's fundraising, and then $200 on Monday. So unless things change dramatically, we're going to go into Moran Monday with a $705 fundraising goal to finish everything off. And that's just...
For you people on the podcast, lay your hands upon your debit card and contribute to the work of this man. He is carrying the message to all the corners of the world, trying to enlighten the dipshits and the dumb fucks. So please, please support this man.
Oh, wait a minute. Now you definitely get a cowbell for trying to enlighten the dipshits and the Oh God.
A little Uncle Ruckus coming out of me there.
Is it dipshits in the top? Yeah, that's not the Horn Family Community Congregation we're talking about there. No.
No. But you got the reach.
Right. Well, you know, one of them might stumble in by accident someday. I mean, after all, Facebook is convinced that I am Donald J. Trump. And that Trump is me. So you never know when one of the little weirdos might tune in.
Or somebody might mistake you for the other Horn. Is there another The Horn?
Oh, yeah, there is. And I think they even bogarted part of our logo. Some guy out in Colorado.
Something else.
Brother Deacon Asa hipped me to that. Scott and Punky note, my favorite Helen Keller quote, life is either a daring adventure or nothing. And I love the fact that when we were doing the state quarters, the state of Alabama chose to put Helen Keller on the back. And all those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals had no idea they'd done put a socialist on the back of their money. The goddess of irony, she pays attention, you know.
Well, I'm just glad they didn't put Reagan on the dime. Remember when they were talking about that?
No, you know what's good? I'm just looking into my magic eight ball with the cracked screen that says answer hazy, ask again later. You know what's going to be sickening? I mean nauseating. When they decide to name, and the Republicans will insist, when they decide to name an aircraft carrier after Donald Trump.
You don't think there's going to be the SS Clinton first?
Well, I mean, that's the way it worked out. We couldn't. Oh, what was it? We couldn't name an aircraft carrier after Harry Truman unless we also named one after Ronald Reagan, I think it was. You know, because it's like we're children, and you know, if one kid gets something, the other kid has to get something. So yeah, I mean the idea
Come on, Bob. He's going to go the way of Nixon. Just pray for it.
I don't pray. What are you telling me to pray? Well, you pray less than I do.
Well, just think about it.
I think I trust more in Rupert Sheldrake.
I mean, Nixon didn't get nothing. There's not a highway named after him. There's not a bridge named after him.
No, I mean, he's got a library.
An airport.
Well, doesn't he have a sewage treatment facility somewhere named after him? Oh, no, that was George W. Bush. That's right, I forgot.
What's this bullshit that Trump keeps saying that he bought Mar-a-Lago from the government to save them money because it was just too expensive to maintain as the Southern White House? But it was the Southern White House. How can he say that?
I don't necessarily know that he did. That could be the spirochetes talking.
Just look at all the money he's making from the summit with the Japanese.
Yeah.
Well, you heard that when he was standing there with the Japanese prime minister and doing about a two-minute promo on Mar-a-Lago. All my friends from Asia and Europe come to visit me at Mar-a-Lago, and they really enjoy their visits here. It's a wonderful place. And that was where I heard it. I call it the Southern White House because it was at one time, and it just became too expensive. So I did the government, I did the country a service and bought it. So it was. And I can imagine
facts mean nothing to him. Nothing.
Well, he doesn't even know the White House in Washington, D.C. is called the White House.
Sometimes we call it Tippy Top.
Yeah,
He's mattered in the March hare, okay? But as I've said a million times, the vast majority of the problems we have are not Donald Trump problems, they're Republican Party problems. And as long as the Republican Party gets what the Republican Party wants, we're going to keep having a Donald Trump problem. The best example, he put on a charm offensive with Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, because if we could just keep the Democrats together, Pompeo would not get past he's not going to get past his confirmation hearing, and B, he wouldn't even win confirmation in the Senate, in the whole body, because the margins are that narrow now. And if Rand Paul continues to defect, then the only way he gets Pompeo in is through, one of those mugwump Democrats like Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp. And that's significant. That's real. But the Republicans keep giving him what he wants because, they're humoring a mad tyrant, but along the way they're getting their fondest wishes, like that executive order I was talking about yesterday, that screws untold millions of Americans who just want to be able to eat food.
Yeah,
I mean, we're rapidly approaching the sing for your supper administrative remedy. You can sing for your supper, Clarity. I can't carry a tune in a goddamn bucket.
They talked about financial insecurity and that as the rents are going up because of demand, and we've added 9,000 households since 2008. Rental properties that fast. Anyway, they said that the average insecure renter, which is the person that's paying more than 30% of their take-home on housing, has an average savings of $10. And the average homeowner has a little over $7,000 average in the bank. But the people coming up now aren't leaving the rental market because they're not buying houses like, their parents did or their grandparents did. And it's becoming a point where housing is eating up so much of the economy in that lower bracket that they can't afford to transportation. They can't afford to buy a car. They can't afford health care. They can't afford, you know, just basic stuff besides eating. But they don't, you know, they don't qualify for any type of support. You know, and that's a ticking time bomb. That's, you know, a whole, you know, millions of people.
Yeah, no, those are the people who are going to freak and die when the economy collapses.
Well, and they said that, you know, evictions are up since Trump took office. And that's, you know, an untold statistic that when you evict somebody, you know, it creates a ripple effect. You know, the kids have problems at school. You know, marriages break up.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, all these things that happen because people have insecure, you know, housing. And
I saw a meme on Facebook the other day, and it showed a picture of Jimmy Carter, and it said, "This man is an evangelical Christian who has spent a significant portion of his life building homes for people who didn't have them." And then it showed a picture of Trump and said, "This man is no Christian at all." And it said, "For people who don't have homes, and evangelical Christians hate him, Jimmy Carter." And then it showed a picture of Trump and it said, "This is a man who has spent his entire life throwing people out of their homes, and evangelical Christians love him."
I saw that, Bob. I commented on that. I sort of took a page out of the, what was it, the crazy Baptist group that used to protest the military funerals.
Westboro.
You know, God hates fags. I wrote, "God hates fake Christians!" !
Nicely done. Hey, I want to send out thanks to Kitty in Boston. Kitty just jumped in and took us down under the $500 mark, down to $490. Kitty jumped in for a specific reason. "Dipshits and dumb fucks. Oh, my. Giving Clarity my own cowbell. That was wicked funny. Have a great weekend, everyone." Oh, thank you, Kitty.
You.
Thank you so much.
Bless you, Sister Kitty. Bless you.
Meanwhile, Darlene in Connecticut says, apparently Comey doesn't think Trump is a madman. He said Trump knows exactly what he's doing and is very shrewd. Really? Go figure. And I confess that I have moments wondering that myself. Because particularly his social media, we talk about taking the phone away from him and so forth. But his social media is largely run by one of the longest standing loyal maggots.
Scavino.
Dan Scavino. And so the stupid punctuation and the stupid capitalization and the bad grammar and the poor spelling could, it's conceivable, all be a bit.
Disarming the enemy, thinking that he's a half-wit.
Well, and making his partisans think that he's one of them. Hey, he's barely literate, just like me.
Yeah, yeah.
He reads on a third grade level. Dang, if I work hard, maybe I can too.
Well, and in this anti-intellectual, you know, somehow, you know nothing culture that we're into now, you know, a rerun of the 1870s, 1880s, whenever it was, the it was 1840s, the know-nothings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're suspicious of anybody that, you know, except for, you know, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. You know, he's somebody that's an intellectual that, you know, they look up to. But, you know, the social science and the stuff, they're really suspicious of them. And this was another thing that Lars brought up today, that somebody proposed doing a electric scooter share program in Seattle. And the city of Seattle turned it down, you know, as a testing. And Lars jumped on them, going, "Well, if they can't try a high tech, something tech in Seattle with all the Amazon and Apple and all these companies, where could they do it?" And the reason they don't want to is because they want a permanent plan for transportation, shared transportation. And he goes, see, government, you know, they can't handle anything in a technological age where everything's changing fast, that, you know, things should be permanent. It's like, no, nothing's permanent. Things are changing really fast, you know, and what are they expecting? And then he said, you know, government just can't do anything right. You know, they just screw everything up. And then he turns around and he says, this is what they tried in San Francisco. And, you know, people just left them parked wherever. They wouldn't park them where people could walk down the sidewalk. So it's just not going to work. And it's like, well, then you've already decided it's not going to work. You just need to blame, you know, the liberal city of Seattle, which has a, you know, a city minimum wage and that sort of thing, and a socialist on the, you know, mayor, whatever she's, or head of the city council, you know, all those things, you know, so they target Seattle for, pathetic but not funny department. It's like, God, people listen to this. Anyway, their sponsors today was a prostate treatment, non-invasive prostate treatment for a super truck customizing company, a get out from a timeshare condominium attorney,
no bullshit nutritional supplements.
Yeah, kind of like that. And then there was one, obviously they're tailoring to older gentlemen that are driving trucks and stuff. You know, well, do you run for the bathroom every 20 minutes where you don't have any control and you're having trouble with this and this and this? Come in to try this, you know, the first month's free, and yeah, that sort of thing. But it was called prostate PST something X. You know, it had this really long, you know, scientifically sounding name. And then at the end, it's like, may cause blood bleeding and side effects are real. And then they played the phone number again. So it's like you got their attention because you're trying to tune in on the warning, you know, side effects. And then they give the phone number, you know, and you're listening in. It's like, you know, it's like a sandwich commercial. Put the warnings in the middle of the commercial. But I just go, God, these people are paying for radio. You know, these people are paying for radio, and they target their audience. You know, old men that have enlarged prostates and want to get their truck fixed up, and older people who thought a timeshare condo was a good idea and realized that it didn't pay out. Well, and then the IRS commercial, you know, you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, come see us. We'll get a payment plan arranged for you, or sometimes we can completely erase your debt. And then this actor comes in. I had $15,000 and I've been paying for years, and now it's gone and my credit record is clean. It's like, okay.
Yeah, just so you know, Clarity, my firm competes against those kinds of hucksters. You know, they'll take $5,000-$10,000 of your money and not do a damn thing for you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So.
And they don't have to because they're not actually lawyers, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. You know, in order to deal with the IRS, you don't have to be a lawyer. You know, to represent a taxpayer, you don't have to be a lawyer. You just have to be like an enrolled agent is what it's called. You know? So it's really easy, you know?
Well, I thought you might, y'all might.
My mother used to be an enrolled agent.
Yeah.
I thought
you. Yeah, a lot of tax preparers are enrolled agents. So they do tax return preparation, and then they do like audit representation, that kind of thing, you know?
Well, you basically have to.
Yeah.
Sign your name on the damn form.
Well, you don't have to. You're not liable if you prepare a bad return. It's the taxpayer who's liable. I mean, they can. Taxpayer can come back and sue you, or you can get in trouble with the IRS if you prepare fraudulent returns as a preparer, that kind of thing. But, you know, you're not really technically liable as such.
I think Uncle Ruckus has a message.
Yes.
I've heard how the other half works. Do you want to interrupt this blessed mission of this fellow Bob Kincaid, or do you want to listen to hemorrhoid commercials every 10 minutes flat and a bunch of trailer trash, extra counties in and insurance for your wife's feline eczema?
I think it's time to promote you to sister deacon there, Clarity.
Feline eczema, that's like restaurant quality there, Clarity.
For feline eczema. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no getting around it. Hey, but here's a strange and weird little thing. Mike in Cascadia just sent me this map of the United States, in which there are 50 states, I might add. And it's ranking the best and worst state economies. Okay? It comes from visualcapitalist.com. The number one state economy in the United States is, according to this map, Washington. California is 2. Oregon is 7. Utah is 3. But as if they had drawn a circle around it or something, and they did draw a circle around it because it's dead last, West Virginia. But here's the thing about West Virginia. It's not just the worst state economy in the United States. It is 51st. That means we're like losing. You know, Puerto Rico has its problems.
American Samoa. Instead of them.
Puerto Rico, American, the Marianas Protectorate. We're 51st. One of the comparisons on the scale is the amount invested per capita by each state. Washington, for instance, has a $154 investment per capita.
Yeah.
West Virginia, $5.
That's a spread.
That is that, yes. No economy at all. On the other hand, the investment per capita in Mississippi is $1. And I think they were rounding up. But overall, we are the 51st worst economy in the United States. Maybe they're counting D.C. I can't... Yeah, they're counting D.C. D.C. is the... How about that? D.C. is the fifth best economy in the U.S. That's amazing.
That's weird. Yeah.
But hey, we're less than two minutes away from the close of this 4:20 program, and I want to thank you all for a delightful conversation this evening.
Yeah.
Clarity, thank you. Billable Rick, thank you. Thank you, Sparky, as ever, for your participation and in moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to all of you for your emails and your tweets and your Facebook postings. Thank you to each and every one of you who helped keep the program on the air. Remember, the folks who keep the program on the air are a significantly smaller number of people than the folks who listen. And if you can help, if you can spare the cost of less than half of a McDonald's hamburger per program, subscribe at $10 a piece for $10 a month. And that will ensure that the program is here when you tune in to find it. And again, for 8.5 people, there is a challenge on the table, courtesy of Tony and Chico, that will double your first month's subscription. Okay. And if we ever got up to $410 a month subscribers, I wouldn't have to talk about fundraising anymore. So especially not just those who listen live, but those who listen on the podcast. We don't charge for the podcast either. There's nobody gets charged anything. This is all just a giveaway. But we do ask for a little bit of help keeping the program on the air. So that's where we are. That's where we end things this evening. Moran Monday will be here before we know it, the 23rd of April. And we will have a $690 fundraising goal to finish up. If that gets knocked down over the course of the weekend, that would be magnificent. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. But always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.